welcome to the Michael U podcast. First and foremost, I just want to thank you guys so much for listening to my very first podcast. I'm really excited to present it to you. I think before we get started, I'm just going to give you the Cole's notes on who I am and why we're doing a podcast. So my name is Michael U, and I am a realtor in Vancouver and also one of the partners at Oakman Realty, one of the fastest growing real estate companies and real estate brokerages in Vancouver. So I started in real estate when I was very young, when I was 22 years old. I struggled very hard when I first got started. Didn't get a whole lot of help from people around me. It was really challenging. It was kind of a sad story for why I got started. My father passed away. I needed to stay in Vancouver and work for the family. So started in real estate. It was very, very difficult. Struggled hard at the start. And fortunately enough, over the course of the first year of my business, I did a lot of door knocking activities, cold calling, open houses, expired listings, for sale by owners, everything I could do because I didn't have a big network and I didn't have a lot of money to spend on marketing. And fortunately enough, in my very first year, I sold 53 homes. And I was the Real Estate Board of Greater Vancouver's Rookie of the Year. And since 2006 till now, I've been a top 1% realtor in BC or in Greater Vancouver. So we started an agency called Oakman Realty 5 years ago. And this brokerage is based on helping and being of great service to realtors and buyers and sellers that our agents serve. So we're here as a resource for knowledge and training and great marketing for our agents to succeed. And so we started the company very humbly with only one or two realtors. And our philosophy is to give as much transparency as possible to our agents and then to the clients so that they can grow their business. And we grew quite substantially from one or two realtors 5 years ago to now almost 300 realtors in Greater Vancouver and two main offices in Oak Street, Oak and 16th in Vancouver, and also one in downtown Vancouver on Homer Street. We also have satellite offices in North Vancouver and Olympic Village and also in Burnaby. So we're really excited to continue our journey and yeah, we're just very excited about the prospect of the future for our company, Oakman Realty. So why did I want to start a podcast? Well, being a realtor, being an entrepreneur on my own quite a bit, I spent a lot of time alone and it's a real lonely life. And I got so much from podcasts. And even before podcasts, I used to listen to CDs, like tons of spoken word CDs from Tony Robbins and Tom Hopkins and all the different types of real estate gurus. And I would listen to them over and over again. And I listened to a ton of different podcasts that have really helped me to grow my business, helped me as a man, helped me to be a better friend and better family and son and boyfriend and partner and everything. So basically this podcast is for those people that are out there that are running businesses. And I just want to help. I just want to be a resource. And maybe if that's just a friend in your passenger car, just imagine me in your passenger car. Or if that's to help you to grow your business, like whatever it means, that's the reason why we started this podcast, to have a lot of fun. So I think there's a lot of power to the spoken word as well. I think over the last 500 years, there's been a turn to the written word. You know, a lot of books have been published, a lot of those types of things. But there was an oral tradition that goes back into mankind quite a bit. And I think that there's a return to the oral tradition. I think voice recordings are the next big thing, and I just obviously want to share my stories through this medium, and I'm really excited to get started with that. So you're going to learn a lot more about me if you continue to subscribe to our podcast channel. So our first guest is Amanda Lehman Choi, who is our office manager here at Oakman Realty. So let's get started. Amanda Lehman Choi, welcome, Amanda.
Thanks.
Well, you know, first and foremost, just thank you so much for being a part of the first ever podcast. You are the first guest, and I'm really excited to obviously get to know you better. So why don't you introduce yourselves to everyone, your role, your current role, what you do right now, and yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so my name is Amanda Lehman Choi. I'm the office, well, first of all, I'm very privileged and honored that you asked me to be your first guest. Yeah, I'm the office manager of Oakman Realty HQ in Oakman Realty downtown, and yeah, I just kind of help try to put the glue together, I guess.
She puts glue together. So, you know, how did I ask you to be a part of this podcast? Was it like, Can you share the story?
I mean, it was only yesterday, but I barely remember what happened.
I'll tell you the story. So, I called Amanda yesterday, and I voluntold her to be the first guest of my podcast because over the past 3 years getting to know Amanda, she's such an interesting person, and I just wanted to share with everyone all the amazing experiences that we've had together, as well as kind of getting a little bit of the inside of how to run a real estate brokerage and what a real estate brokerage is. And I think that'd be kind of fun to talk about a little bit later, but yeah, just happy to have Amanda here with us. So Amanda has a nickname. Her nickname is Ace, for those of you that don't know. So Ace is our office manager. I'm gonna share the story of the reason why we call you Ace.
Because you thought that Amanda was kind of too awkward and long to yell.
That's right. So
it's not to the point. It's like, Amanda, it's a little too involved, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It's too formal. I like when I like to, like, when I scream at people, I like to, like,
chill.
Yeah, one word. So, but that's just a joke. But yeah, Ace has been an amazing part of the team, and we're so excited to work with her every single day. So tell me, we want to hear your story. We want to hear, like, your origin, where you came from, because I think, like, obviously, people's background, their history, it makes up who they are. So, why don't you share with us?
Yeah, so I was born in a really small city called Leduc, Alberta. It's just 15 minutes south of Edmonton. I'm an only child. My parents, I think the question I get asked absolutely every day is, what are you?
Okay.
So my mom is Caucasian. She's actually from Nanaimo, BC, and my dad is from Hong Kong. And yeah, it was just the three of us growing up. I grew up in Leduc, as I said earlier, which is kind of just like a suburban city of Edmonton. It's changed a lot since when I was a kid. Back then, there was kind of like one convenience store, and it felt more like a little town. Now it's very much more of like your traditional suburban community, not too unlike Langley or something like that. And yeah, I was a figure skater, and that was kind of my prime focus all through being a kid and then a teenager, and then I kind of quit around 18.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then I went to school in Calgary. I went to art school. I got my Bachelor of Fine Arts in focused attention in media arts and digital technology. And I moved out to Vancouver, mostly because I just thought it would be pretty,
yeah,
or prettier than the prairies. Worked for 3.5 years as an EA, and then I saw this Craigslist ad, this crazy Craigslist ad, and I was like, why not? And then I started with Oakwood.
Yeah, and that was 3 years ago, right?
Yeah, like 2.5 years ago.
Yeah,
it'll be 3 years in November.
Right. So, what was it like, you know, growing up in Leduc, Alberta? You know, I've always grown up in Vancouver. I've always been in a big city. So, like, what was your experience in Leduc? Were you the weird arts kid? Were you the athlete kid? Were you the popular kid? Like, what kind of kid were you?
I think I was actually kind of all of the above.
Awesome.
I was I was kind of one of those people that was in a lot of friend groups. My elementary school was really small. It was only 13 kids, and it was the same 13 kids until graduation.
Wow.
We had 10 girls and 3 boys in that class.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went
good
to
odds,
junior
guys.
And then when I went to junior high, it was a much bigger school, and high school was quite large. Most of my high school I actually did by correspondence, but my mom just thought it would be super important for me to stay involved in public school. And, you know, I took art classes and drama classes, some more social ones while I was in school, and then my other ones by correspondence that were a little more conducive to solitude. I'd say I mixed in a lot of a rather large friend group. I think I hung out with, like, artsy people, drama people, then a lot of, like, the jocks.
How do you can hang out with that many people when they're 13 people?
Well, no, this is in high school.
Oh,
in high school.
School,
yeah,
like
and then I was, like,
yeah,
hung out with
house.
The jocks, hung out with skaters, like,
yep,
punks, and, like, yeah, and then also, like, I was always, like, on a roll, like, kind of nerdy, so, yeah, I was
that's
in that
the Chinese
kind of
side of you, then.
Yeah, but I'm terrible at math.
Oh.
Yeah, to double check your commission.
Let's edit that out. And so, you know, it's great. And so when you first came to Vancouver, obviously it must have been a little bit of a culture shock to you. Do you want to tell us about the first year being in Vancouver and kind of adapting into a new environment?
Yeah, I think I've always been pretty adaptable, but it was kind of funny. It was like almost adapting to something that I felt more comfortable with, or more conducive to me. Like, I feel like growing up in Leduc, I always felt a little different than everyone. Like, I actually used that to my advantage more than as a negativity, I think. Like, I definitely felt like I was a little bit different than people, just in the way I dressed and even the way I looked. Even it's very white. White community. Like, I didn't ever, I think there was only one or two other like ethnic people in my high school class even, which was over 1,000 people. So I think in many ways Vancouver kind of felt more natural to me in a lot of ways. Just when I was in New York, I felt like my most self, or a city that was most reflective of, you know, a place where I felt comfortable. So coming to a larger city, it was kind of adapting to feeling a little more natural. But then, you know, it's kind of funny because you don't stand out as much.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So like big fish, small pond, then you're like going into the...
Yeah, and I just look like every other Vancouver girl now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you assimilated really well, and, you know, I guess it takes us to a few years ago when you started in real estate. And tell us, was it, like, what attracted you to be a part of a real estate company, to work in real estate? How did that kind of get started?
It was kind of, you know, it wasn't something that I ever can say that I was something I was always interested in. But growing up, I used to actually love going to open houses. I was one of those annoying people that probably just wastes a realtor's time, like, checking out an open house. But, I remember my dad was always into it, and he was always kind of interested. My dad just loves anything to do with business or the economy, and just, like, he loves knowing what's going on in different industries, and real estate being one of them. So he's always just, like, checking it out. And when I think of back of, like, my initial interest in real estate, I think it was that. And my parents always talked about, you know, what was going on in the city, like, all the time. Like, we never really had traditional family dinners, but driving in the car was kind of when we would talk. And my dad would always talk to me about, you know, what's going on in, you know, various markets, real estate being one of them. And I always did enjoy having those conversations and thinking about it. And I think my interest in wanting to work in real estate in Vancouver is that people tend to talk fast and move fast, and Arlene knows this about me, like, my biggest pet peeve is slow talkers.
Okay.
And one thing, or really monotonous talkers.
Right.
And one thing about real estate is everyone talks very excitedly and very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, a very weird thing to say of what attracted me to it, but I think it was honestly the type of people. And it's the thing that I enjoy most about my job every single day, is we're around so many interesting, you know, quick-witted, like, interesting people, that is just a really fun industry to be involved in, especially in the city.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously getting started here a few years ago, tell us a little bit about Oakland. Tell us a little bit about your experience, you know, being the like, just where you started at Oakland,
mm-hmm.
like, what the journey was. You know, obviously it started with ads, so tell us a little bit about the ad.
Yeah, so after I finished my job as an EA, I kind of didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. I kind of felt like maybe I would get involved in, like, gallery work or something more in the arts, but I was kind of, quite honestly, just looking for a job at the moment. And my last experience, I can't say the most positive things about it. There were a lot of positive things to take about it. To take from it. But in terms of being in a really positive environment where I really felt inspired, that was just something that I really wanted. And I remember seeing the ad, and it was just like, I actually just wanted to answer the question, like, if you were a nerd, what nerd would you be? And I just wanted to answer Indiana Jones mostly. So that was, like, one of the reasons why I applied for the job, is because I wanted to answer that question. And then when I came in, I met with Arlene first, and then Morgan and our former office manager, Ashley. I was just blown away about how driven they were, and, you know, obviously having a management team primarily women, I was kind of intrigued by that and very different from what my past experience was. And then I remember on my second day, I sat down with Michael and we had a really good conversation. And I was just like, whoa, you know, this place is really just a different dynamic than what I'm used to. And I started off sitting at reception doing conveyance there. And I didn't even know what conveyance was when I first started. You know, I think the thing that I really liked about it was that I was just involved, like I said before, in such fast conversations and having to learn things at kind of with a bit of pressure. And I kind of thrive in that type of environment. And yeah, I started off there and then kind of moved more towards conveyance. And then I guess it's just been a little over a year that I've been the office manager.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've grown as well. So,
right.
Yeah.
She started from the bottom, now she's here. How's it go? She started from the bottom, now she's here. So just some things real quick. So Arlene is the managing broker of our office who met with Ace first. Morgan is one of our business partners here at Oakwind. Our previous office manager, her name was Ashley, and she helped us to get the office started, you know, when she was a valuable member of our team for the first three years, and then Ace has been with us for now three more. So we're really excited to obviously, you know, be working with Amanda every day, and she's really shown amazing growth in our company. And she's such a huge, valuable asset for us and our team. And I think she's really one of the difference makers here at our office. So we're just so impressed with her maturity and her and the way that she carries herself around the office and really embodies what it is to be an Oakwindite or with our office, with our brokerage here. So did you have any experience working with other brokerages or like with any other brokerages or anything like that, Amanda, before you got started? Or did you have any expectations?
No, not at all. I mean, I think I did have an understanding of how a real estate brokerage works. Surprisingly, from what I've learned, having started, probably more than I think your average person does. Just, you know, the basic, you know, how does a real estate agent work? Well, they're licensed through a brokerage, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think I did have a little bit more knowledge of that. But in terms of had I ever stepped into a real estate office other than Oakwind, it was only actually a couple of months ago that I had been in another brokerage.
Ooh.
But other than that, this was the only real estate brokerage I had ever, you know, stepped foot in.
Yeah. Traditionally, just for those of you that don't know, traditionally real estate brokerages are kind of stuffy and stodgy places with like really bad coffee and like lots of weird quotes, like go kill them on the wall. And yeah, we tried to do something a little bit different here at our firm. We wanted to have more fun. We wanted to have really great service and marketing to buyers, sellers, and the agents that are in the office. So like those are our philosophies. And you know, we try to make it fun and different. So even our job posting, when we do our job postings, we try to engage really great people. So in order to get really great people, you need to do something a little bit different. So instead of just having receptionists, it's like, what kind of nerd are you? And we put like math equations and other weird kind of questions because we kind of think of ourselves as what we call real estate nerds, which is one of our core values here at our office. So you want to talk a little bit about being a real estate nerd and what's like, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, for me, be a real estate nerd. Like for myself, for example, being an office manager, I'm not a licensed realtor, which is, again, probably another common question that I get asked around the office for maybe those who don't know me. But no, I'm not a realtor. In terms of, am I really, like, can I get into the questions about, you know, how many dollars per square foot and everything like that? I wouldn't say I'm necessarily like this hardcore into real estate, like it was an innate passion before. But I think one thing that it means to me is just being passionate about what you do and interested in what you do. So whether it's, you know, whatever you're doing around the office or whatever you're doing in your job or your life, like don't just do it when you're just entering things in and kind of half-heartedly thinking about something else. Like it's so much more fun when you get into what you're doing and really feel it and kind of get that, you know, where you just take agency with it and you're just excited about it and you try to do your best and you try to do better than you did before or find a new way of looking at it or just there's a problem, not just be like, ugh. Okay, but like, oh, how are we gonna figure this out? Like, this is interesting, this is engaging. And to me, like, that is being a real estate nerd. It's just not even necessarily real estate specific, but just whatever you're doing, just do it passionately. And it's your life, it's your time, you're doing your job, may as well get into it and have fun, right?
Absolutely. And I think being passionate about what you do is very, very important. You know, if you're the listener that's a entrepreneur or a small business owner or thinking about it or even working for a small company, passion is so important. It is absolutely key. And what being a real estate nerd to me means is it's really interesting because part of the team that helped to originate our core values here at Oakwind. And so I'm a huge comic book nerd. So I would go to the comic conventions. I go to comic conventions very often, actually. And I saw these people. Ace, have you ever been to a comic convention?
You know what? I've always wanted to, but no, I haven't.
Okay,
I've walked by them.
All right, I got to take you. Because there are these people that are there. And you probably heard of something called cosplay, where they like dress up as their favorite character.
Mm-hmm.
Like you dress up as a Superman, or even in my case, I would dress up as Iron Man. And I did that at a recent event. And really get into the character. And these people were just so happy and so passionate about the character and their hobbies. And they were at play and they were just so intense. And I just saw these people and I was like, wow, what if we had this type of feeling about our profession? And we want to attract people here at the company, and I want to be around people that are like nerds, that are just like, they're so passionate about what they do. They're unapologetic about their love and
excitement
for their profession. I think it's really great to see, because I feel like we surround ourselves with a lot of nerds and a lot of real estate nerds, and you know, being in this office is been pretty amazing. We're doing this podcast out of my messy office right now, and so like we're really you know, it's really fun to just have the opportunity to do these types of things together.
Yeah.
So obviously the past 3 years haven't been all blue skies and rainbows and unicorns.
They haven't.
So like I'd love to hear some of the challenges. Like, you know, let's get real here. Like, let's hear the real deal. So like, what were some of the challenges you faced? What were some of the like the hard times that you've been through, and just share like how you potentially got yourself out of them and go from there. Yeah.
I think the hardest parts for me is anytime when our core values were questioned or maybe lost along the way, because we've had such rapid growth. And just to put it in context for those of you who don't know, in the time that I've been here, like when I started, we had 50 agents. We now have around 280 something, you know, so with that rapid, and then we have more offices as well. And in that time, two of our core values are innovative service, and then another one is to create community. And creating community and providing innovative service are one of the hardest things to do when you're growing rapidly. You know, like, how do you maintain that level of service, and how do you create a community when a community is like constantly expanding every single day? New faces are coming in, and you know, it's not just like this tiny little office where, you know, everyone knows each other and what they eat for lunch. You know, it all of a sudden becomes like this larger company. So, you know, that's definitely been a challenge, and it's been something that I think those two things that we're constantly facing every day, how do we maintain that? And I think anytime that's been questioned or kind of put out of place, I think for me, those have been the hardest things to deal with, because we are ambitious. Goal setting is a huge part of what we do, and growing is part of our goal of what we need to do to get to those next levels, those next steps, to constantly like do some of our other goals, which is, you know, embrace and drive change and pursue growth and learning, and, you know, just always being on the edge of what's next in our community and our industry. So there are always times where you take a step forward, but then you also have to take a couple steps back, or life throws you back. And I think we've definitely had those times, definitely times where people, even ourselves, have questioned, are we still able to do these things? And so constantly finding new ways of re-examining what community is and innovative service is when your whole company is constantly changing has been, for me, I think, the biggest challenge and the biggest thing that I try to do for our realtors and our staff and our community every single day.
So what kind of tips you would say, like, let's say somebody is having an expanding business. It could be a real estate business. It could be a water bottle business. It could be a greeting card business. Anything that I can see in this office. It could be a parking ticket business. And let's say over the past 3 years, we can condense some of those things. So as Ace mentioned, a couple of our core values at Oakwind are innovative service, so that's solution-based services, and creating a community. So that's your customers are kind of like a community of people. So to create a community within your company as staff, and also within your customer base. That's really important, where they feel really proud to be a part of, to be buying your pair of shorts or your they're working with you and to create that community of customers. So if we were to take some Cole's notes, some like three bullet point things, and this is how we would provide innovative service or and maintain that in a growing company, and the same thing with creating community, what would
the answer
bullet
be?
Points be? Yeah.
Well, I feel like I'm still learning, and I'm still learning every day what the answer to that is. But I think one big one is your inner circle. And, you know, it's so hard to kind of even maintain, like another one of our core values is to lead by example. And to be honest, sometimes it's hard remembering absolutely every person's name who's a part of our company. But I have to hold myself to a standard that I want others to do as well. So if I want others to, you know, greet each other when they come in or having lunch next to each other, I better do that myself. So anytime that I walk by someone and I'm like, oh, you know what? I did not say, hey, Sanjay, how's it going? I better, right after I walk by, kind of walk back and say, hey, Sanjay, sorry I missed you. How's it going? You know, just putting yourself in check and always just not being okay with letting things slip. So, and you know, it starts with yourself. It starts with your inner circle, and then it kind of goes from there. So just even the littlest thing of, you know, greeting people as you see them in the halls and not just kind of look down and shuffle some papers and walk away or look at your phone and ignore them. That obviously, I think, is at the crux of making people feel warm and welcome in the office and making them feel safe and wanted and just like that difference of what makes us stand out. So if I'm not doing that myself, then how am I going to expect other people to do that as well? And you know, it's amazing how little people you need to kind of evoke change, and totally starts by leading by example and within yourself. And then I think it's also, just to go back to our other core values, being okay with things changing and embracing it. So, okay, yeah, I'm not able to shout across the office an announcement that I want everyone to hear, but maybe I need to think of a new platform to do so. That platform wears out, what's the next best thing, and just go with it and then keep pushing it. And thinking about, okay, well, where are we at actually? Is it where we were? Are our old systems still working? Probably not, because that was when we had 50 people. We've tripled that.
Six times.
I'm like, wait a minute. The math.
She's right. She's not gonna.
Yeah, I told you. Never ask me to do math in my head. It's terrible. I need a calculator. But yeah, just, you know, not being too committed to what used to work, but just, you know, there's so many tools out there for, you know, this isn't the first time a company's grown. You know, so there have been other solutions, and just being open to them and accepting and just driving those changes, mm-hmm. I think is what the real answer to those challenges is.
You know, something that you said really stuck out to me. There's something with the kind of this new society or this new culture about like not greeting people, ignoring people as they pass you by and not acknowledging their existence. I think it's creating a substantial amount of loneliness. And, you know, I don't know if those of you out there or in this room, like, have you ever experienced any loneliness before?
Have I been lonely? Yeah, of course. I think everyone has. I am actually probably a little different than most people in this office in that I am an introvert. I do feel more energized when I'm alone. I do sometimes feel exhausted when, you know, I'm around people all day and everything like that and constantly talking and, you know. So I actually do prefer a bit of loneliness in my life. But at the same time, I think everyone has had those feelings of feeling maybe a little too lonely, or, you know, we live in a world where everyone is looking at their phones all the time, or they'll sit in a crowded bus or restaurant, but everyone's looking at their phones, or even at a table for dinner with a bunch of your closest friends and everyone looks down and they're on their phones.
Right.
So I think that, you know, it's incredibly true, especially nowadays, people are probably feeling a lot more lonely.
Yeah, I think we really lost a sense of that community, and I'm really glad that we kind of broached that subject. And I feel like a big reason for the growth of our company is that we really take strides to be a community and really make true friendships in the office, to be able to just give openly and transparently with each other, and really try to kind of take a mandate where my ceiling is your floor. So everything I've learned in my life, I'm here to share it with you guys. That shouldn't be where you start. It shouldn't be a place where you're having to learn everything on your own. But you know, where there's a common knowledge, a shared knowledge, and I think that that's has really been lost a lot, and I found that that was a really missing component many of the other workplaces that I was in previously, especially as an entrepreneur running a business, you know, late nights and early mornings where you're like, what the heck am I doing? Or I'm screwed about this, and there's no way out, there's no one to turn to. And we really feel like that's being a really big part of growing our Oakwin, our business. So, you know, I think that those are some really great tips for growing companies and being a part of a growing company. So obviously, yeah, Amanda's a leader in our office. She leads the conveyancing, which is whenever you process a sale, you would use a conveyancer to, she could tell you better what it is.
Basically, take it from there.
Yeah, so
making sure that everything like happens in order for closing to happen. Closing is when the title changes from the seller's name to the buyer's name. And then also, fun part about being a realtor, getting paid.
Yeah, so she does that.
Not that that's the only fun part, but I feel like that's, if I was a realtor, that would be the most fun part.
You know, it's really interesting because, you know, being an agent, there's a lot of assumptions and
Was I making an assumption?
Yeah, I was making a huge assumption about like us making it rain all the time, and like there's just like $20 bills that we're just shoving into the sky, and we're like rolling and sleeping in a pile of money. And, you know, that actually created a lot of anxiety for me when I first started in real estate. As a new agent, I got really stressed out by being kind of, I'm meeting someone and there's an opportunity to make more money than I've ever seen before, potentially. And it's all a maybe until people start signing papers and stuff like that. And it would make me so stressed out. And has there been a time, like, while you've been here that you've been really stressed out?
Right now? No, actually, I'm not stressed out right now. Yeah, for
sure.
Well,
you're sweating profusely.
I don't sweat. Yeah, of course. You know, anytime you're, you know, like, I'm sure a lot of real estate agents will, you know, feel what I'm saying on this, is, you know, you know, not that we're, you know, doing brain surgery or we have people's lives in our hands, but we do hold, you know, people's investments and their trust. And for on our side, the admin side, we're holding agents' business, and our job is to support their business. And they do live on commission, and their clients are putting their entire investment in their hands. So there is, you know, an incredible responsibility there to make sure that you're, you know, doing your best work and making sure that everything is handled appropriately and well. And you know, any time you're doing something for the first time or something you're unsure about, it you know, obviously there's an intense amount of pressure to not screw up or anything like that. So I think everyone feels those moments where you're like, oh my god, they're trusting me with this. And I bet a lot of realtors feel that way as well, where you're like, whoa,
yeah,
these people are listing with me. Really? What if I
I'm
screw it all up?
Someone signs something with them, like, are you sure?
Yeah.
So how do you deal with stress? Like, what is your top two things that you do to deal with your stress? Is there something that you do short term and long term to help you to, like, cope if you're...
I've always been someone who kind of actually thrives in situations that they feel stressed about or maybe ill-equipped to do. So I kind of mentioned before that I was a figure skater growing up, and the reason why my mom put me in figure skating is I was actually, she thought there was something wrong with me and that I was so socially inept and terrified of other people. Like in my preschool photo, like I'm in the corner crying and I literally could not socialize with other children. I was just terrified of all other people other than my mom. And she put me in figure skating, which is obviously something that you're doing in front of people, wearing a ridiculous outfit, you know, dancing on ice. It's one of the most ridiculous things you can do in front of a group of people. It's also something that you do kind of by yourself. You're not up there with a group necessarily unless you're doing synchronized skating or something like that. Just to kind of throw me into like almost one of the polar opposites of my comfort zone. And what surprised me is, you know, I loved that feeling of being absolutely terrified. So even just something like this or public speaking, like I actually, my nature is to be very terrified and shy. but I kind of enjoy scaring myself, if that makes sense, or putting myself in situations that make me uncomfortable. And the interesting thing is once you do it, you realize it's not that bad or it's not that hard. So I think in terms of dealing with stress, it's just to do it and to know that you're going to be okay and you're going to come out alive. You're not going to die, hopefully. And then it's just another thing that you've done, and it's not something to, you know, give too much power to. If you give too much power to the fear, you know, you're just going to stress yourself out. And stress is just a state of mind. So I think knowing that and just doing it, whatever it is, whether it's, I'll take this $5 million listing and I'm just going to do it. Or if you're like, okay, I'll take this $500,000 check and figure out how to process it. It's all kind of the same thing.
You know, that's really interesting that you've change your perspective around stress or around tough times or around a challenge, and you've just totally, I learned something. So you really just change your perspective on what that means, and just kind of, instead of running, but really like facing it head on and dealing with those challenges. So, which is not really what people do. A lot of people would run away, or they'd complain, or they'd kind of control around certain things. And so, you know, having that attitude and that perspective on stress is something that's amazing. Is there anything like that you do to, like, from a, not just an immediate perspective, but from a sustainability perspective, to be able to manage those and have those attitudes, and manage stress and have those attitudes around it?
Well, Michael, this is something that actually things that you've told me to do.
Awesome.
I'm not going to lie. And yeah, you told me my job is sometimes very overwhelming and stressful. And sometimes there is too much on my plate. And maybe there have been times, there have been times that I have been working too hard and putting work in front of almost everything else. And I'm so, not to, you know, compliment you too much on here, but so grateful that I actually have such great bosses to work with. Because they definitely understand that it's not about a short-term sprint, it's about the long-term journey. And, you know, you've always been very encouraging to me to have more balance in my life. And I think when you have balance in your life, the things that you're stressed out about don't seem so terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I have other things going on in my life, the problems at Oakwind don't seem so big. You know, I've had this conversation with other agents, you know, where they're getting so stressed about something, and, you know, and I say to them, you know what, it shouldn't mean this much to you. Yes, this is a terrible problem, but there are worse problems, and the fact that it means this much to you, maybe you need more balance in your life.
Ooh,
you know, like, you know, I feel like you're better when you're better. So you'll be higher performing over a longer period of time if you have more balance in your life to just kind of help maintain that. If you're fueled on other levels, like with your health and your friends, you know, they shouldn't all be friends from work. They should be friends from a multitude of places to give you various perspectives on things. You should have a good family life, and, you know, all of those other relationships, all of those things will give you a better perspective on the problems that you have, and so that the stresses at work don't seem so stressful, and vice versa. So the stresses at home, maybe you can kind of take solitude from them at work. You just have more balance that way.
Well, I think that's a really good point. I think it's funny. I think a lot of people put a lot of, there's a lot of narcissism in this world, and that your problem is the biggest problem in the entire planet, and having the objectivity to understand that in perspective, it's not the end of the world, and in perspective, there are other things in life that are also equally, and if not more important than doing business, is really awesome, and it's a great attitude to have. And I always like to think of me having an out-of-body experience. Like, have you watched Christmas Carol or with Charles Dickens?
Yeah.
Goes, yeah. So when he gets to, like, look upon his life,
and
it's weird that this weird story has made such a impact to me. But I always like to have an out-of-body experience. And if I was to do a certain thing, you know, how would I do it? Based on having an out-of-body experience, taking a bird's-eye view, how do you get from A to B? And looking at it purely objectively. And I think having the perspective to look at different types of balances in your life is a really important thing. Now, in terms of real practical things, I'm gonna drop some dimes for some of those people that are dealing with a lot of different activities that they need to do. I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, my guess is that most people that are listening to this are going to be entrepreneurs or be a part of a small business or in entrepreneurship in some stretch of the imagination. You could be a realtor or a salesperson or whatever. So most of the listeners are probably pretty extroverted. You know, if you're in business, typically you tend to be an extrovert. If that's the case, you really need to get things out of your head. And I think that's a really important thing. So when an extroverted person thinks too much, it's like they go wild. And a lot of the times they're stressed out about a number of things. And then when they actually write them down, there's like three things. And mm-hmm. they just have to do them. So I'm a big proponent of just breathing and writing down exactly what I need to do or what it is that's bothering me and writing it on a piece of paper, getting it out of my mind. Because when I'm able to look at it on a piece of paper, it really helps me to understand what are the action items to solve this issue. And so that's one really big thing that I do for myself to kind of chunk problems. So let's hypothetically say I have a big problem, like how am I gonna get business? I would think of that as a, I think that's the number one question a lot of business people ask themselves. How am I gonna get customers? How am I gonna get business? Then I chunk them and I say, okay, how am I gonna get business? And then I have three different ways in which to acquire business, and these are the things that I can do that are within my control to be able to get more business. And this would be one stress for a lot of business people. Another would be dealing with staff. How am I going to be a better leader to the staff? And we're going to talk a little bit about leadership. I hope you don't mind. You know, being one of the leaders of the office. So what are some struggles or some tips or some tricks that you've had being one of the leaders of the office? You lead the entire administrative and accounting staff here at our company, so which is, I think we have 10 or more staff. And so, yeah, I'd love to hear some things about leadership and some ways in which you lead. And yeah, love to hear some of your challenges maybe with leadership.
You know, there's so many different ways of doing it. I've had, you know, quite a few different jobs in my life. And growing up, I had coaches and things like that, and obviously teachers as well. You know, I've had people that have been really great in those roles, and I've also known some people that weren't so great in those roles. And I think to me, being a manager is mostly about being responsible and everything that people do or your team does within you. And again, I think even just like going back to just what the word I use right now is team. My role in that team is to try to be a leader. It's not my team, like team with my staff or anything like that. It's we all have a job to do, and it's different, and all of those roles are equally important. There's no, you know, you have to kind of take your ego out of it. And one big thing that I always try to think of when I'm trying to be a leader is thinking about what's happening on the other side, and that's more important than what's happening on my side. So, you know, if I'm having a little chat at the front or talking to someone, think about where the other person is coming from more than where I'm coming from. So if I'm going into it expecting a certain turnout or I have a certain agenda behind what I'm saying, I'm thinking more about what the other person is thinking on and feeling on their end. And I think that's one of the biggest things. And I think that in terms of the better leaders that I've had in my own life, they've also kind of approach things in that same manner. So kind of thinking about where, empathetically thinking about myself more than them in that conversation, I think is one huge thing. And, you know, even just going back to our core values, leading by example, I think people garner a lot of respect by people who do rather than what they say. So just even the little things, you know, if I want people to show up on time, better show up early every day, right? You know, if I want great reliability and attendance, you got to be great at that yourself. And one thing, again, to go back to skating, one thing I really learned there is if you want to kind of stand out and be good at something, you have to do it 10 times better than what you're expecting the standard to be. And then those little things just make standing out that 1% possible. And people notice that. And so you have to be really committed to being the change you want to be.
Yeah, I think that is awesome. And I think, you know, if I was to put it in an imagery, I think the best leaders lead shoulder to shoulder, not face to face. So when we think about leadership here at the office, I like to think of it as, you know, we're doing this together as a, like, as friends and as a community, as a group. And we're fighting for a goal, or we're fighting for a purpose or a mission or something, as opposed to like persuading people to do things your way, to really look at it from as a unit. So if you take a sports analogy, if we're looking at hockey, like we want to score a goal. So the five of us are on the ice together to score that goal. So it depends on everyone has a role to play in it, and how are we going to do it effectively, efficiently, in the best way moving forward. And so I think that's a big part of leadership in many ways. And I think do you ever study anything about leadership, or like have you ever read any books or any media, or is there a leader that you really admire in the public sphere or anything like that?
This is gonna sound so like I'm being a bit of a brown noser here, but
bonus.
One of our owners, Arlene, is definitely, I have to say, like a absolute mentor in terms of the type of leader that I would like to be. I think she does it with such grace, and she garners so much respect, but she does it with absolutely no ego. And I think that's the thing that, I really try to aspire to be, because I think that she garners true respect, and it comes through just because she just is trying to help people, and she's just trying to be, the best that she can be, and, help people out. And she just has so much grace that I would love to always be looked at the way I think that people respect Arlene.
Mm-hmm.
And the way she kind of comes to me about things, like I always feel like she supports me more than I support her. And so I always try to do that with my team as well, just try to support them more than they support me. And I think that that is something that really, it's that kind of like bottoms up philosophy that we do in a lot in our business. And I think that that is huge. My dad as well, he's always been an entrepreneur. He has that same philosophy. It's always that the owners should be the ones working the hardest, doing the most grunt work. And really, if you believe, other people will believe as well. And people can tell when you're bullshitting. They can tell when something's genuine. And people are attracted to someone who has a real goal and really believes in something, and it inspires people. And they want to get in on that. People love that feeling. There's nothing that I think other people love more than being inspired and, just want to have that amazing moment. So if you really believe in something, kind of like, the Jerry Maguire idea of, when she's like, I just want to be inspired. I think that there's actually a lot of people like that, and they'll do an amazing job for you if you really believe in what you're doing and, own it and just go for it. But yeah, my dad's always been an amazing leader, and I think he respects people, and so people respect him.
That's an interesting movie. I haven't thought about Jerry Maguire in a long time, but that's a story of an agent, a sports agent.
Yeah.
And how he discovers he was with the top agency in the world, and how he, like the ace says, I think a lot of people that remember that movie only think of show me the money. But actually the hidden message there is to obviously be inspired and sometimes taking a step back and striking out on your own and being genuine and authentic really creates happiness. And sometimes from the exterior looking, being the kind of top company, top dog at the top company with the top thing is not always going to deliver you satisfaction and,
mm-hmm.
and true happiness. And so he discovers that through trying to be inspired and taking steps back and really, it's a great movie. Now that you bring it up, I gotta rewatch it. But I'm gonna switch it up a little bit here. I get a lot of people talking, and this is something that's just different for me. I don't know if it's important for a woman leader or for a man, but a lot of people comment in the office on how fashionable Amanda is, and I know there's a podcast, but you can't really see what is going down, the outfit of the day. But I want to talk a little bit about fashion with you.
I did not expect the conversation to
go
here.
I am the least fashionable person in the world. My sister buys all my clothes. Oh, my girlfriend buys all my clothes. I wear orthopedic shoes. And I am not a fashion person at all, but Amanda is a big fashion person. She comes in. A few people have commented on how she looks every day in terms of. And so what does fashion mean to you? What is it about? Let's talk fashion, girl.
Yeah, it's so funny because I really didn't see things going here. But yeah, I'm happy to talk about fashion.
Sure.
I know it's probably your favorite topic.
I think I've always
loved clothes. It's funny because even both of my parents are not fashionable people at all. They don't care. They really, my dad shops at Walmart. They don't care. Like, it's just, like, kind of, like, what's worse every day. But my mom always wanted me to be, like, the best dressed in my ballet class or, like, whatever. Like, she got into it. Like, for whatever reason, she didn't really care about what she wore, but she always, like, really loved having, you know, fun outfits for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I think I've always really loved style and things like that. I've never really, but at the same time, it's not something I give too much thought to every morning. Like, I usually get dressed really, really fast.
Okay.
I think it's just something, like, my friend Tiffany started doing this a long time ago, but we would be like, what's your theme of the day? And I would always have, like, this random theme in my mind of who I was dressing up like.
Mm-hmm.
I have always really liked, you know, thinking about characters and, you know, various things. And sometimes, you know, it's like, I don't even want to say anything because I feel like I'll embarrass myself. Kind of forgot we were on a podcast right now. But yeah, I feel like I always have a little bit of a mental theme that I just carry with
every
me.
Every day.
Of what, yeah.
So what is the theme of today and what is the theme that you've used the most?
I feel like I'm going to be embarrassing myself.
No. She just looked down at herself. She just checked herself out.
Well, today I feel like I'll do like another day because today way too embarrassing because you're like wearing a white shirt and like black dress pants. What kind of theme could there possibly be? But I feel kind of like pilot-y.
Today?
Yeah, like I'm a little
cool.
bit of a
yeah.
pilot today.
Charge,
yeah, but then I'll always mix that with like some other themes. So right now I feel like 80s pilot Barbie.
80s pilot Barbie. Wow. That's pretty loaded.
Yeah, that's what I didn't want to say because it's so embarrassing.
So do you actually cognizantly think of this or is it subconscious?
Yeah, every once in a while, I'll be like, ooh, I'm going to be a little bit more Russian today. Or like,
see, this is good.
Sometimes, like, you know, like a little bit of a military theme, but then you always have to like counterbalance that with something opposite. So like, military brat snuck out and then joined the hippie commune, kind of. That's my theme of the day, or that's who I am today. So I always kind of have like a little fun thing in my head of terms of like picking a theme. But what's, you know, if I actually want to sound less stupid saying this, I feel like every fashion, like I've read a lot of interviews with, you know, some of the best fashion designers in the world. And whenever they're designing a collection, they usually have some sort of thought like that in their head. They kind of think of a character or a girl or a woman and they kind of run with that. And then they kind of create that entire collection around this idea, whether it's like a bohemian princess escaped from like military prison or something like
right.
that. Yeah. But yeah, it's something I remember starting to do pretty young. And I remember when I met a friend of mine, Tiffany, we were talking late at night and I told her how I always do this. She's like, I do too. And she has the same kind of fashion sense as I do. And I think my fashion has gotten quite a bit more boring over the last couple of years. But one thing I've kind of made an effort to do is kind of get back into that. And because there's something that I enjoy doing every morning, you know, just like picking my theme and then going with it. And then you can do everything around that, whether it's your makeup or your accessories. It all has to tie into this 80s military or 80s
pilot
Barbie
theme. You know, so does it impact the way that you act, do you think, during the day?
Yeah, I think very much so. I notice a big difference. Obviously, we are in real estate and it's, you know, I'm meeting a lot of different people every day and there is a different dress code than there is, you know, in other offices and in other industries in general. I think people always think of real estate agents or people who work in real estate, especially in a big city like Vancouver and also a, you know, a pretty high market, or is that the word?
A very hot market
like Vancouver.
High market as well because there's
higher
a culture
price
in Vancouver.
Point.
Yeah, higher price point.
Yeah. You know, so there are certain expectations of what people are expecting when they sit down in a meeting with you. But I do feel more confident, you know, when I'm my 80s pilot Barbie, I guess. No. But I do think there is a big difference on not just how other people see you, but how you see yourself. I think when you're dressed more casual, you feel more casual.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing I always like about the theme is you can really get into it and you kind of have like your, like I know Beyonce uses like her alter ego Sasha Fierce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of just feel like a little bit of a different person, and you can have a little bit more confidence. And there are certain outfits that I wear when I want to feel a little bit more, a little bit higher level in whatever I'm trying to do. If it's, I know I'm going to be speaking that day, you know, I'm going to try something a little more powerful.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any fashion icons, and not in, like, not people that we know or inside of, like, but in celebrity or pop culture?
I feel like I used to a lot more. I've always loved, like, Kate Moss. I grew up with Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen. They're
okay.
The same age as me, so I always, like, had them as a style icon.
Cool.
I think now, like, I don't as much anymore because I don't really partake in as much celebrity culture as I used to. But, yeah, I always, like, and then sometimes, like, even when I'm going back to the theme, like, I'll sometimes think of, like, ooh, today I'm going to be a little more Bianca, like, a little more Jagger, or a little more Diana Ross or something totally different.
You know, coming from somebody, I learned a lot about fashion today, because coming from somebody, I grew up watching a lot of cartoons, and I noticed that the cartoon characters always wore the same thing. And if it was up to me, I'd wear the same thing every day. It would never change. It would look exactly the same. And, you know, I wear work clothes every day for everyone else, not for myself. If it was up for me, I would be wearing my sweatpants with the elastic around the ankles, my New Balance runners, and my gray Oakwin t-shirt. but, you know, that's another story. But I think having interests and having, you know, ways in which to get prepared for work, I think, and having certain mindsets is really cool, especially, and if it has to translate in the physical world through fashion is kind of cool. But I like this thing about icons. So now, no, don't say my sister, because I've been hearing how good my sister is my whole life. So Arlene, who Ace mentioned a few minutes ago, is my big sister. She's the managing broker of our office. She's one of the partners here at Oakwin. And I grew up with her, obviously. And she's like grade A student, volleyball star, teacher's pet, greatest daughter, greatest sister, greatest granddaughter, always doing everything right. So, you know, which is really great. And she does an awesome job. She's been taking care of me my whole life. So, yeah, she's an amazing woman. But a lot of people don't know who she is. So let's talk about a business or a kind of a icon that you aspire to, and what lessons have you derived from aspiring to be some semblance of somebody out there, the great white
woman. One person who, I don't know, like, I feel like if I had a little more time to think, I'd probably have a better answer, but I always like people that just have kind of an interesting perspective on things, are really good at kind of spotting things. So, you know, kind of going back to kind of like my art background, I've always loved, you know, Gertrude Stein. I thought she was an amazing, innovative woman who just, like, had a great ear, eye, and, you know, I'm sure she had a great nose as well, in terms of, like, finding things that would be really, really special and different.
Who is Gertrude Stein?
Gertrude Stein. She was, you know, BFFs with Ernest Hemingway, Picasso, all of the expats that moved to Paris. War II, for all of the most amazing American writers and so many European artists as well, like entire movement around that time. She was, you know, their editor, their curator, their best audience to kind of help them get to that next level. She's someone she's a writer herself, and her partner, Alice Tolkien, I believe. I don't know, my art history is really bad these days, but her partner was also an amazing writer as well. And yeah, I just think she had amazing perspective and just, like, saw everything. Like, she knew Picasso before he became Picasso and knew that he was going to get to that next level. And she coached, you know, all of these great writers to be the best that they can be and kind of help them get to that next level in their careers and their journey. I've always found myself as someone who likes to help other people get to where they're supposed to be in their own unique way. That's someone who I've always wanted to kind of emulate in one way or another. And other people that I just, going back to fashion, Victoria Beckham is someone who I've always idolized. Her and I have the same birthday.
Oh, huge. Posh Spice.
Yeah, Posh Spice.
Yeah.
So she's someone who I've always had a lot of respect for. I think that she's someone who's really interesting, whose her own career has changed so many times. And, you know, now she has an empire around her, and coming from a pop star beginning and kind of an interesting life, and, you know, great home life as well, and amazing friends, and has done so many things. So she's also someone who I've always wanted to kind of be like in one way or another. But I don't know, I don't think I'm motivated by a lot of the same things a lot of other people are. And that's one thing I noticed pretty early on in my life. I didn't necessarily want exactly what I think a lot of other people want. I kind of just wanted to have an interesting journey and build a life of having lots of different perspectives and a very rich life. Not necessarily in the monetary way, but just rich in experiences and perspectives and, you know, just to feel like I really lived.
So what are the next two experiences you want to have?
I want to get my master's. That's something that I've always wanted to do.
Master's in
business, actually. I want to do my EMBA.
You'll get it, yes.
And I've always wanted to, next big experience. Well, what? Actually, I shouldn't say that one.
Why?
Because it might be private for our company.
Oh, okay.
I've always wanted to take a company public. I've always thought that that would be like the most amazing thing to do in a career. I think it'd be really cool. I can give you another one.
There's no secrets around here.
Yeah.
I think there is an absolute, it's hard to say for sure. There's no science around, but I'm glad we're doing this and being doing this podcast together, because I think there's a power to a spoken word, and I think that is something that is undervalued, and there is strange magic around speaking and around when you speak something out, what actually happens. You will get your MBA, I believe in you. You will, and if that's something you would like to do and get a company public, hopefully it's our company. It will be our company. You know, it's really exciting. I truly believe that. There's going to be a changing of the guard. You know, I think for a little while, people wrote books and stuff like that. I think it's going to change. And communication, human communication and legacy and history is going to change to video recordings or voice recordings like this and video recordings like this. And I think that this is the new medium. This is one of the most impactful mediums that you can have. And I think it means a lot when you speak something out and it can come true. So I'm really excited about these two experiences you're going to have. Now that you've told everyone, you have to do them, which is like really cool. And it's a really big and fun part of this journey, because we can look back at this 2 years from now, 2.5 years from now, when you get your MBA and you're like, hey, remember when you're on that podcast, you told everyone you're going to get your MBA?
Yeah.
And we can talk about it whenever it happens. About the other things that we talked about. So, you know, we're running around quite a bit, but I want to ask one more question for Amanda Ace, the office manager of Oakwind Realty, before we wrap up our very first podcast. Pretty exciting. So Amanda has met a lot of different realtors, a lot of different real estate agents, a lot of different entrepreneurs, and a lot of different business people. And some have been wildly successful and some have been not so successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd love to know, in the eyes of Amanda, what makes someone a successful entrepreneur or a successful business person, a successful realtor or agent, and what makes someone not a successful real estate agent or business person?
Yeah, I think the big thing is not letting things get to you so much. You know, I mean, I wasn't there when you first started, and I wasn't there when, you know, some of our top agents started out. But it doesn't take someone being there to know that, you know, they didn't stop and cry when they got their feelings hurt. They just kept going. You know, they just did it day after day, week after week, year after year. And they probably didn't really stop and think too much about it until, you know, they were fully doing it. You know, they knew what they wanted to do and then they just did it. I think so many times, not just in real estate, but whatever industry or whatever goal you have, it's, you know, letting the setbacks get to you and really set you back. Sometimes you just, you know, like things happen, you get embarrassed, you do something dumb, you get something taken from you, and people really let that get to them. I think it's not being afraid to be embarrassed, not being afraid to get your feelings hurt, not being afraid to be rejected, and just keep doing it even when those things do happen. So many people, I think the ones that don't usually make it, the fear gets to them, or the embarrassment, or the whatever. It just kind of pushes them back. And, you know, when I think of our top five realtors, I mean, I wasn't there, but I can't imagine those things putting them back, you know, too far. You know, maybe they, like, were upset about it for a second, and then they just kept going, or it made them stronger, or made them have more fight.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that is amazing insight on success in business and, you know, in many cases in life. So what are some commonalities of some of the entrepreneurs or the business people that you've met that have not made it? What are some of those commonalities that you've seen?
Yeah, I think, you know, sensitivity can be an amazing thing. Since I consider myself a very sensitive person, but I think it gives you a lot of intelligence. But at the same time, I think if you base your courage on your sensitivity, you're not going to make it very far. You have to kind of push that aside and use your sensitivity for intelligence and not, you know, your drive or your bravery. And whatever it is, even if it's, you know, any kind of thing. I think the thing that I've noticed that kind of sets people back is they think too much about the things they're afraid of and the things that are negative or the things that are hard or the things that didn't work out or what other people will say. Or, you know, it's just like this kind of focus on the can't or the things that won't work out and not just, you know, pushing through. And I'd say they're sensitive in a way that ties to their courage, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense, you know, being overly sensitive or letting things that are outside your control change the way you behave is something, you know, is a common trait, I think. And some of the things that I've seen when some agents have not succeeded. But here we are. And thank you so much, Amanda, Ace, for being a part of my very first podcast, the 80s pilot.
That's so embarrassing.
He was like rocking the office every day. You know, we got to know Ace a little bit better, and you're gonna see her in our office here at 3195 Oak Street and also our office in 41286 Homer Street. She's such a valuable member of our team, and I wanted to talk to Amanda the most for the very first podcast because we're such good friends, and I'm just so grateful for her friendship and the fact that we get to be on this journey together. And I wanted to share and have my first podcast with Amanda, and so like here we are. I just want to say a huge thank you to today to be a part of it, and maybe we should end the podcast with so I'm gonna say people of the world, and you're gonna say spice up your life.
Oh.
People of the world,
spice up. Well, what a fail way to let my career just like die.
Okay, so Posh Spice, I know the
she's
Spice
the
girls.
Least.
Yeah, she sings the worst.
Yeah.
And she's the worst singer.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to do this to close out the
okay.
So people of the world,
spice up your life.